Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Today is Enlightenment Day. Happy Enlightenment Day, everyone. Today we, so that's why I was sort of dressed up, because we had a ceremony. Some of you were there. And what we do the night before that ceremony is some of us sit all night to mirror the Buddha sitting up all night under the Bodhi tree. And then waking up the next morning. You know, there's a story from the Buddha after he gets up from the Bodhi tree and starts to walk back to where his buddies, where he left his friends. And somebody passes him on the road and they see this guy who is glowing. He just looks so radiant. And so this person asks the Buddha, "Are you some kind of a king?" And the Buddha says, "No." And he says, "Wow, you must be some kind of a god. Are you a god?" And the Buddha says, "No." And the guy says, "Okay, so you're just a regular guy." And the Buddha says, "No." He says, "What are you then?" And the Buddha says, "I'm awake." That was his claim. You know, he didn't claim to be God. But he did claim that he had woken up. One who has, doesn't Buddha mean that? One who's woken up. So that must have meant he was asleep before, in some way. He didn't fall asleep under the Bodhi tree, we don't think. But there was, when he woke up as if from a kind of dream. He realized that before, there'd been something dreamlike about his existence. When I was a kid, about 5 years old, I lived in London, and so we were there, 5 Willow Road in Hampstead, and so the basement we lived in, and I slept walk. Now and then, once in a blue moon, I'd sleepwalk. So I sleepwalked to the bathroom, and I guess I went to the bathroom maybe. And then there was a spider in the tub, and I got really freaked out by the spider, but I was in this dream world, so I couldn't get the door back open, and I was freaking out in the bathroom because I locked it behind me. It was one of these sly locks. And my parents woke up and there was a big commotion. Finally my father pushed open the door, bending the lock. I can still see that lock, that bent lock. And I would look at it now and then. We stayed there for a couple more years before we moved. And it represented my father's love for me, that bent lock. You know, that he did that. He just broke open the door without question to help me out. So the Buddha says we've been sleeping, and not seeing things clearly. There's a way in which we are not seeing things clearly, and that makes us more anxious and trapped feeling than we need to be. And I think Zen practice is a way to break down the door and wake us up. In this dream state that we're in, that we inhabit, it doesn't feel like a dream, of course, but Buddhism says in various ways that there is a kind of dreamlike quality to it. And in that dreamlike state, things are a little distorted. I think that's the best way to put it. But it's distorted by our thinking. Our fears, I know this is true of me, our fears are exaggerated. I tend to, get more anxious than I need to be about an upcoming social engagement or situation that I'm about to be put into. And the joy that we assume will come from things that we desire, that also tends to get a little exaggerated. We tend to think that that some sensual or material pleasure, that donut, or a little more money, will lead us to, will make us happier than it actually does. And I think also the people in our lives is another distortion. It's a slight distortion, but it adds up over time. I think the people in our lives, are distorted by the opinions that we form about them. When somebody's done us wrong, for instance, we see them as worse than they really are. We don't see the whole person. We just see that "you have wronged us" person. And then, alternatively, the people who have been nice to us, maybe we just see one side of them as well. When we fall in love with someone, everything is great about them. Just cannot see anything but good about that person. And the good kind of spreads throughout everything. Just like the bad, instead of somebody we feel somebody has slighted us, the bad goes everywhere. There's a nice story about that. From the Vimalakirti Sutra, where this goddess visits, who is it? Subhuti or Shariputra? Shariputra. And the goddess, and Shariputra's there with his friends. And the goddess comes and makes flowers rain down on everybody. And the monks there, they're just stuck. They don't want the flowers to touch them, because the old rule is that they shouldn't wear flowers as adornment. That's one of the old rules. So not only has that flower become a symbol of something they shouldn't wear as adornment. It's become bad itself. And the goddess knows this, can see this, probably knew it would happen. And so she just laughs. She said, "You should do more zazen, Shariputra. You should get beyond. You should understand that flowers are not in and of themselves evil or bad. They just had that idea. It was maybe had a good reason to begin with, and then it got exaggerated." And then finally, our sense of self also gets distorted. That's another kind of way that in our dream world, we don't see things clearly, I think. We ourselves become hard to see clearly. We tend to see ourselves as narrower and more fixed than we really are in various ways. You know, having been conditioned by decades of repeated thoughts and stories about ourselves. So there's many ways that I think, again, dream is kind of a strong word, but I think there's a way in which things are, it's a kind of funhouse quality almost. You know, hall of mirrors. Some things are exaggerated and some things are smaller, and it's just distorted. And the Buddha learned by doing deep zazen that to have a clearer, less distorted view of the world. And he did that, according to legend, by doing a lot of practice, by, as I said this morning, by trying lots of different things, lots of different practices, some of them ascetic. And then, finally, he realized it wasn't working for him, this gang that he was with, gang of guys. So he left them, ate some porridge, sat under a tree, and determined that he wasn't going to get up until he really understood himself, until he really, I think, really lost himself fully. So he had that final push under the Bodhi tree. And lots of things happened. He met Mara. And it was an eventful evening. I think, though, that those occasional pushes when we do something that's harder are important for our practice. When we determine that, okay, we're going to take the next step. We're going to do something that's going to push us out of our comfort zone. I think we have to do that now and then. No matter what level we are, where we are, I need to do that. An example of that is last night, this sitting all night. I did wonder for a moment, I wonder if I'm getting a little too old for this, and then I thought, no, I'm not getting too old for this. Just roll with it. But I need to find other ways to push myself as well. I think the Buddha learned under that tree to fully give up, to fully give himself up, to fully die under that tree. It's a longer story than that, but I think that's metaphorically, I think that's what he did. And then he woke up from that death. He resurrected, just like Jesus. You know, Jesus was nailed to a tree and died that way. Buddha gave himself up in a softer way under the tree. He didn't have death thrust upon him. He found his own way to it. So he died quietly and willingly. And that death allowed him to see, to feel, that there was another aspect of himself that wasn't himself, that wasn't the self that he'd grown up with all the time and got to know. There's another aspect that stood alone by itself. And we call that Buddha nature. And when he came back from that, you know, he also resurrected. The story is that Jesus resurrected after 3 days. I don't know how long it took the Buddha. Well, here's the thing. There's this cute little story about how the Buddha wanted just to keep sitting there, and because he liked it, he liked that feeling. And he also says, I've read the old Pali text, it's very cute, like he tells Brahma, you know, this practice, this thing that I found, is very subtle and deep and hard to understand, and it would be very hard to relate to others. I think I'll stay here. And it would just cause me a lot of pain to have to go and try to relate, teach it to others. But Brahma finally convinces him, you've got to go. Got to go out and share it with others. So he does. And when he comes back to the world, he sees the world fresh. And with eyes that don't distort the world as much. As I said, it was an eventful night under the Bodhi tree. Mara came, and Mara, the kind of Buddhist devil, and tries to, which is just to say, I mean, Mara is just, the way I see Mara is just our social self that doesn't want to go find oneself. It's more fun to do other things. And so the Buddha, the Mara comes, you know, he sends an army that shoots a volleys of arrows at the Buddha. But the Buddha knew that these slings and arrows were not as substantial as they seemed. They were not as bad as they seemed. And so he wasn't moved. And when he wasn't moved, then those arrows just turned into flowers. And dropped on him. And then Mara sent his beautiful daughters to do this alluring dance. But the Buddha also sensed, I think, that following them would not lead to the kind of lasting peace and satisfaction that he wanted. And so he didn't. He just stayed. He moved, unmoved. And so they gave up and went home. I think the Buddha really settled down under that tree. He gave up his thoughts, his desires, his prejudices. He became completely still. You could say he died to himself. And then when he came back to life, when he resurrected, he was awake in a new way. He was no longer in that funhouse hall of mirrors where fears and desires of certain people are exaggerated, or himself. You know, the annoying neighbor with the huge belly and the tiny feet, or your mother with a huge scary head. It wasn't quite like that. They're just people. That's our dream world. And sometimes it's said, you know, that's a world of illusion. I want to be careful with that, because it's also our world. Our dream world is our world. And we have to take responsibility. We can't just escape it. We have to live in it. We just have to see it in a less distorted way, if possible. And now and then, with some regularity, we have to break down the door and wake ourselves up. And over time, we don't have to break down the door anymore. We just open the door. And then we go back to our human world where, with things a little bit less distorted. And if we can wake up more frequently, which means to give ourselves up more frequently, to die more frequently, then I think our lives become less distorted, our decisions become better informed by truth, and our relations with others become a little bit less tangled and more clear. So here's the waking up.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.